Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com.
The state of Colorado fired an executive with the Behavioral Health Administration today. No mystery why. Prosecutors say she stole nearly $100,000 from her last job. The mystery is how Lindsay Salas ever got hired by the Polis administration while she was actively under investigation by the state attorney general's office. Our Marshall Zellinger is looking into it.
The state's Behavioral Health Administration, BHA, which is based in this Glendale complex, just fired one of its high-paid leaders. Lindsay Salas was hired in November for a leadership job that paid $188,000. She was hired while the attorney general's office was investigating her for stealing at her previous job at a nonprofit, CASA of Adams and Broomfield Counties. A donor to CASA agreed to pay for Salas's master's degree tuition at DU. Salas is accused of a scheme that led to her stealing $99,000 from that donor. According to the complaint from the attorney general's office, Salas stole from the donor by having the donor overpay her tuition or pay when there was no balance. And when DU saw a surplus in Salas's account, the school would refund the money directly to Salas. Salas was on leave at the nonprofit when it conducted an internal investigation about the tuition money, and she resigned before that investigation was complete. When she applied for the state job, Salas checked the box for the state to not contact her previous employer. She wrote in her application her reason for leaving CASA was to focus on next leadership opportunity. The current executive director of CASA tells me if the state had reached out, she would not have been able to say anything about the internal investigation, but would have said Salas was not eligible for rehire. What about the state investigating a state employee? The attorney general's office tells me it is an independent department. Its investigations are confidential, and it is not our practice to inform employers if an employee is subject of an investigation.
As part of the attorney general's office investigation, Salas has agreed to pay back $66,000. I asked why not the full $99,000, and I was told the amount is agreed upon based on a person's ability to pay. Though if she misses any payment deadlines, she'll owe more, $125,000. CASA also sent its internal investigation to the local district attorney's office, which could still consider criminal charges, Kyle.
So it's been a while since I've been job hunting. What I see on the internet is that it is not unusual to say, don't contact my current employer. Like,
current.
Don't tell my boss I'm looking for work. But this, like, don't look behind that curtain over there. Whatever you do, don't look over there.
The fact that it's an option, like, the person's not working there anymore. You'd think that is something you do as a background check. And the governor's office told me a background check was complete. And I said, well, was her current employer or her previous employer contacted? And the answer was, oh, it was a criminal background check.
Oh. Well, keep hitting refresh, guys. All right, Marshall Zellinger, thank you. Colorado's Republican Party is at war with itself. A far-right faction of the party wants to shut unaffiliated voters out of the primaries this June. Now Colorado's four Republicans in Congress are trying to stop it. Representatives Lauren Boebert, Gabe Evans, Jeff Hurd, and Jeff Crank are asking a federal judge to let them intervene against the Colorado Republican Party's efforts to close the primaries. Hurd is the only one with a primary challenger in June, but all four reps say their campaigns would suffer because seeing the trends among unaffiliated primary voters can be a predictor of how their campaign will do in November's general election. The data could be especially valuable for Gabe Evans' campaign in Colorado's 8th District, which is expected to be one of the closest midterm races in America. This issue has divided the Colorado Republican Party for years. It really came to a head last month when a federal court rolled back some of the requirements for political parties to opt out of the state's open primaries. So now some party leaders are trying to kind of speed run through the legal process so they can exclude unaffiliated from the primaries just weeks before ballots will be mailed. The Republicans who want unaffiliated voters out of their primaries will sometimes say it is so that they can have more conservative, more MAGA candidates. But other times, you'll hear them say that non-Republicans are meddling to pick more MAGA, more conservative candidates that will then lose in the general election. So, either way, the other contingent of Republicans who want unaffiliated in says that unaffiliated voters being alienated is how Republicans will keep losing in this state. The teachers union in Sheridan and Arapahoe County says its members have unanimously voted to approve a deal brokered yesterday at the state capitol. More than 100 teachers walked out April 1st after months of stalled negotiations over their union contract. The teachers union says, quote, a vast majority of their demands were met in the tentative agreement ratified today. That includes their request to unionize other school staff like bus drivers. The president of the union says the deal includes protections for students who missed class during the strike. Democratic Governor Jared Polis called both sides to the Capitol yesterday to finalize the deal. He was growing increasingly frustrated that students were missing class for weeks. Both sides say they want teachers back in class by Monday.
It has been an incredibly difficult, long, serious fight, and we are so excited to get back into our classrooms with our children where we belong to give them the education they deserve. We need to be in the classrooms as quickly as possible, and we're encouraging the school board to make their decision today, tomorrow, this weekend if possible, so that we can be there Monday.
Yeah, hitch and egg, giddy up. School board is not scheduled to meet until Tuesday. We asked the district if they plan to meet earlier to approve the contract, have the teachers back on Monday, but the Sheridan School District, as usual, did not respond to our questions. A former co-owner of a funeral home where nearly 190 bodies were hidden was sentenced to 30 years in prison today. Kerry Helford faced 25 to 35 years under a plea deal on state charges of abuse of a corpse. Her ex-husband, John Helford, got 40 years in February. In 2023, an investigation found the couple had improperly stored 189 bodies at their funeral home in Penrose, that's near Colorado Springs. The Helfords would trick grieving families by sending them fake ashes. John Helford also got 20 years in federal prison on charges for cheating customers and defrauding the government out of nearly $900,000 in pandemic relief. Kerry Helford got 18 years from the feds on the same charges. I'm not exactly sharing a secret to tell you that some of Denver's best food is found along Federal. It is a cultural hub for a variety of communities and groups, which is why there is concern about what's going to happen to the Asia Center at Federal in Mississippi, where there are plans to tear it down and build apartments instead. Our Spencer Soysher has that.
Vietnamese isn't spoken on most streets in Denver, but there's one street where you're most likely to hear it.
Okay.
Kathleen Ta's parents opened Golden Pho in the Asia Center in 2013, and it's more than just a nondescript strip mall in the Little Saigon area on Federal Boulevard.
This is just like the Viet community. Like, this is where everyone does their shopping.
But they aren't sure how much longer the restaurant and the rest of the Asia Center will be here.
Colorado will lose, like, a huge part of, like, the Vietnamese identity, essentially.
This week, a developer filed plans with the city to demolish the strip mall, replacing it with a four-story mixed-use building, ground floor retail, and affordable housing on top.
I don't think anyone really knew until it was, like, posted on Facebook.
The developers say this project is still in a very early exploration phase. There are no finalized plans and no timeline for construction. Just about 4% of Denver's population is Asian, and there's real concern the project will close businesses during construction and eventually price them out.
Like, that's one thing that I know people are worried about, is because it's like, it's so unknown what's gonna happen.
The developers say the property needs repairs that have been left unaddressed for too long.
Maybe make improvements to, like, the area, don't, like, erase what is already here.
The property group says they know the history and significance of this place. Kathleen sure hopes so.
Losing the community, really, like, that's how it feels.
There's another complication here, the bus rapid transit project, BRT. We've seen what that construction has done to businesses along Colfax over the last couple of years who are struggling to survive. Construction for BRT on Federal is supposed to start next year and go through 2029, Kyle.
Man, so businesses know that they're going to be in for a hard time no matter what there. It just always comes down to the fundamental question, right? Denver's a great place to live. More people want to live here, so you want to build more housing. But then how do you put in the housing without tearing out the things that make it a great place to live?
Right, you got that balancing act right there. And obviously Federal, one of the best parts of Denver.
For
sure. It'd be a shame to see something go away, but obviously housing needed as well.
A unique part of Denver, right?
Yep.
Right, a unique part. All right, Spencer Soysher, thank you. Colorado's beautiful San Luis Valley has economic challenges. And a big one these days is the lack of child care. 80% of kids in the valley don't have access to licensed early care. It's a huge problem, but the community's been working on a huge solution, and we can be a part of it. This week's Word of Thanks microgiving campaign supports the Boys and Girls Clubs of the San Luis Valley. They're putting the finishing touches on this enormous early care and learning center. The community down there has raised millions of dollars to make this happen, and they are so close to their fundraising goal and finishing that building. And it is going to be such an asset to the community. A licensed nonprofit daycare for more than 150 kids, plus a workforce training hub for rural educators and caregivers. That's in partnership with the local college and the school districts. And there will also be support at that same building for families struggling with hunger or trauma. This means that parents who didn't have reliable childcare will now be able to go to work or to school and help the local economy and their own economic fortunes. Kids will enter kindergarten better prepared to learn. And this will create jobs in a rural area that really needs them. But above all, this is stability for families. Scan the QR code on your screen or text the word thanks to 303-871-1491. We'll shoot you that link to donate. You know, even $5 helps, because that's how you've raised $18 million in microgiving. 7,500 of you have signed up to make a monthly donation to the Word of Thanks Fund. You put in your info once, pick your donation amount. Each month, your donations automatically split among all the nonprofits we feature. Here in April, there are 5 weekly campaigns, and we expect that those monthly donors will contribute almost $40,000 to each. She spent her life sharing the story of the San Luis Valley. Now, the family of folk artist Josie Lobato wants her story to be known. Well, here it is, new nightmare unlocked. The state is warning about an invasive species of aggressive worms.
Hear ye, hear ye, today thou art here for the Shakespeare Festival.
Ah, to be or not to be, that is the question on most days, except for Fridays here on Next, when the question is, say it with me, what's your good news? That's next. A new invasive pest has made its way to Colorado. The Asian jumping worm is spreading along the Front Range. They found it from Boulder to Castle Rock. The worms are originally from Japan and Korea. They likely came to the U.S. in contaminated soil, like with plants. You can tell it's an Asian jumping worm as opposed to an American worm by its movement, right? The Asian jumping worms thrash around. They move a lot more aggressively than a typical earthworm. Also has a white band around its body that typical worms do not. The state's agriculture department says these invasive worms, they harm soil and plants. They can drive out the normie worms. If you see an Asian jumping worm, you can report it on a form on the Department of Agriculture's website. They tell you don't move the soil and don't use the worms as bait. See now, Corey Rappenigan, I thought that we had a solution to a couple problems. You take all those Asian jumping worms up to Antero Reservoir and you just fish the living hell out of that reservoir before they drain it, right? You pull all that trout out and let the trout eat the invasive worms.
I like the way you're thinking right there, because, I mean, the fish cannot resist a worm just thropping around like that. Man, what a creeper for sure, but could be useful in some ways for sure. We've got some relief coming our way here in the way of cooler temperatures and even some precipitation. Cold front's going to be here tonight. This is the impact on your temperatures in the morning. It's going to be cloudy, dreary. Temperatures close to freezing here across the Front Range all the way out to the eastern plains, and that's going to have an impact on our afternoon high temperatures as well. We probably won't make it to 60 degrees, so it'll be an overall much cooler day, and it's going to stay that way likely all through the week, and it'll even have some rain chances. These are your rain chances in Denver tomorrow, admittedly not very big. Could get a sprinkle out of that early morning stuff, and then in the evening we got about a 15% chance to catch a shower. Douglas County has a little bit better chance, but overall Saturday is very isolated. Sunday, your morning plans outdoors, probably pretty good until about noon. That's when the rain showers show up, and at least we do have rain chances each and every day this week.
The stories of the San Luis Valley are woven into the work of folk artist Josephine Lobato. She helped revive and recreate a forgotten art form called colcha, style of embroidery brought by Spanish settlers to the Southwest. Lobato, who was a National Heritage Fellow, passed away over the weekend at the age of 90. Her family tells us her love for community lives on in her work.
I've been focused on San Luis from the time that I started. All my work that I have done and I continue to do is focused on San Luis itself.
I think for the San Luis Valley, she served as not only a storyteller, but a preserver of tradition and culture.
She was everybody's grandma. She was everybody's Aunt Josie. My dad would tell us stories, and my mom, you know, did her colcha It was very important for her to show her traditions and her culture through her art. She really embedded in us to keep our culture and our art alive.
She took an art form. She didn't follow the traditional path of other culture artists. She took it and then she created her memories, and it was more like a diary in a way, where she was just recording everything so she wouldn't lose it.
It's life, it's love, it's stories, it's culture, it's family, it's generations, it's ancestors.
It's not something that you could ever forget. And it's not something that you could ever mistake for anybody else's work. She put her own stamp on it, and her own stories and her life and her memories and her emotions. And how could you ignore something like that?
We have big shoes to fill that I don't think would ever be able to fill, because her shoes were so big for such a little person.
As far as we know, she's gone, but the love and support that she gave that entire city and town of Chama, San Luis, it's eternal.
Each Friday's light, our treasure trove we bring of hopeful tales our faithful viewers share. 492 such weeks we sing, this time from Denver's Fest of Bardic Flair.
For the Shakespeare Festival.
My good news is that downtown is alive and well. The smiles, the joy.
Minions! Tonight, we steal the moon! Yeah!
My good news is it's Friday, because this is the last day, and then I get to have fun all day.
Hear ye today at 10:20. Thou shalt see the Shakespeare Parade.
My good news is that I really just like being a jester. Like, it's really fun. Like, I can express my feelings.
My good news is that all these schools can come and play and have a good time, and that we can all be here to enjoy it.
My good news is I just had 13 elementary school kids who had never performed Shakespeare before in their entire lives just get up on a stage and show an audience what they've been working on.
My good news is the Avs are up 3-0.
Tell me why.
We have 5,000 students doing Shakespeare.
My goodest news is that we're down here with our students. We've got hundreds, maybe thousands of kids down here who have been working on their lines and their scripts.
My good news is the kids love this. They do Shakespeare every year. Every year all the fourth graders learn all this and work so hard, and we love it.
His goodeth news, did you hear that, Marilyn?
Goodeth, I did hear goodeth.
All right. Feedback, goodeth, and otherwise next. Feedback tonight is a scolding from Joe about my comment on using the invasive Asian jumping worms as bait. Joe says, don't take it lightly. That's how pine beetle kill started, taking it lightly. It's a reality. Joe, I was joking. But it would be irresistible to have a worm as bait with a shaken backside. Jeff writes, dude, you look like a grape. And a text says, great Easter sports coat, Bad Bunny.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News, streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.